This week on the Indo Daily.
I actually don't believe, right, that priests had her out of any harm. He just, like, thought I knew. But that's how I found out Miriam Martina was dead.
How likely is it that Trump will be found guilty of paying hush money to former adult film star Stormy Daniels?
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots, and over on the Irish Independent website.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
The Six Nations on the Left Wing Podcast.
And for the fourth time, Ireland are Grand Slam champions for 2023. Guinness Six Nations champions on an afternoon that will never be forgotten in Dublin.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing. Well, Ireland have done it. They've made history by winning a Grand Slam in Dublin for the first time ever. What an evening it was here at the Aviva Stadium with that 29-16 win over England. Well, Rory O'Connor and Keane Tracy are here with me. Well, we've managed to find a quiet part of the media tribune here, lads. But Rory, firstly, I mean, what a privilege it was to be here and witness history being made tonight.
What we witnessed out there is something that Lands End Road and its 100-odd years of history has never seen before. An Irish team winning a Grand Slam with their fourth bonus point win out of five. They really should have had five, the perfect set, 25 out of 25, but we won't quibble too much about it. Home crowds, St. Patrick's weekend, all the stuff that went with it. Johnny Sexton's final Six Nations game, possibly Keane Healy's as well. Him breaking the record. He's been saying over and over again that this is the stuff dreams are made of. I don't even think people dream... dreams are this ambitious. You know, this was a magic night in so many ways, and I think it got to the team over the course of the 80 minutes, but they once again found a way to win a game that was looking like it might get away from them at different times. And it's a mark of the calibre of performer that they are, that they were able to wrest control of the game. The red card and everything we'll get into, I'm sure there was a lot going on out there, but when the moment came, they were able to strike, they were able to score, they took their chances when they were offered eventually. I think they could have made life a little bit more comfortable for themselves, but maybe it would be a bit more boring that way. It was dramatic as well as everything else, and you just got to sit back and admire what they've done over the course of the last couple of months. Over the last year, what Andy Farrell has done with this team, it's an incredible achievement, and one that will go down in history, the history of Irish rugby, the history of Irish sport, is one of the greats.
And it was that fairy tale finale for Johnny Sexton, his last Six Nations game here. It all came true.
It did, yeah. I suppose when he was walking off, though, I think the one thing that was in his head was how long was he going to be out for.
He didn't want to be taken off either. He was like, I'm walking off myself.
He didn't. And actually, Dave Kelly, our colleague, was sitting behind me, and he kind of pointed out straight away that he could hear in the ref mic that Johnny Sexton was going while he was on the ground. How long am I going to be out for? How long am I going to be out for? So I think that just gives you a small little insight into his mindset. Of course, you know, he did, at that stage, the Grand Slam was pretty secure. I think, Rod, you were sitting next to me. I think you were getting a bit nervy throughout, but I was fairly confident. I was, yeah. I think in Murrayfield even last weekend, like, to have come through all that they did, I just think you have such belief in this team at the moment, and I agree with Rod, they weren't at their best, but they found a way. But just back to Johnny Sexton, yeah, like, he's coming off and he's going... He's trying to take in, I think, the standing ovation that he got from the crowd, as well as the Ireland bench, and it was a massive, massive moment. But a massive part of it in his head was going to be, you know, am I going to miss games for Leinster? You know, he wants to have the fairy tale finish with Leinster. There's plenty of games coming up for them as well, and obviously the World Cup. And that was the big kind of takeaway, I think, from the press conferences afterwards, how Andy Farrell turned around and he said that... just before they came into the room, that he'd said to Johnny, we've got bigger fish to fry than this. And that's the kind of the overriding sense. Of course, Ireland are going to, you know, cherish this and appreciate it because it's so rare, only the fourth time ever the country have won it. But it's just a little insight into Andy Farrell's mind, isn't he? They're going to enjoy this for the next few days, but really it's all about the World Cup. And, you know, if they'd had a bad Six Nations, there would have been question marks going in there. Now they're going to go in with a target on their back. But as they've shown... not just through the Six Nations, but also in New Zealand last year, that they're able to handle the pressure. Now, you know, different kind of pressure is going to come in the autumn. And I go back to what Rob Kearney said to James Ryan after the 2018 Grand Slam, that, you know, you've got to appreciate these kind of moments because they just don't come around that often. I think guys like Keane Healy, Johnny Sexton will be driving that message. You know, like guys like Matt Hansen only made his debut for Ireland last year and he's winning a Grand Slam. So I think that's really important that the players go out and, by all sounds of it, they're going to go out tonight and they're going to enjoy it and fully deserving of it.
Yeah, Rory, you mentioned there how relaxed even that Andy Farrell was in the post-match press conference there. But what about the job that he's done? A few years ago, he got an awful lot of stick for, you know, the way he started off with Ireland. And look what he's done now. A series win in New Zealand, number one ranked team in the world, and a first ever Grand Slam in Dublin.
Like, it's 2 years almost to the day since he was going into a game against England where people called him for his head. You know, that not a lot, but some prominent pundits were saying that they don't see it getting better and it's time to make a decision for the IRFU. I don't think any of us from here were making that call, but I think we all worried that things were going in a difficult direction for the team. And they had an awful habit of running the ball into touch. And you were kind of wondering what was happening with their attacking platform. But there was a plan, and they won against England a couple of years ago. One of the players who was key to that win 2 years ago, Jack Conlon, was one of the reasons they won the game today. A guy who comes off the bench, having been displaced by Caelan Doris, who's arguably the best number eight in the world. And a player like Jack Conlon, who was brilliant off the bench last week, didn't earn his place back, comes out today.
That offload.
Incredible offload. But it wasn't just that. It was just everything he did, he had an impact to it. And I think it's a measure of what Farrell has done, that he can drop a player like Jack Conlon, but Jack Conlon still wants to play for him. Johnny Sexton said one of the great things that Farrell has been able to do is that even the lads who don't get picked still love him. That he hasn't changed since he was an assistant coach.
How does he do that?
I think he treats them all like adults. He treats them like grown-ups. It's like little touches. Having the families in yesterday, the families on the pitch today. All of the things he's done to decompress the environment. Look, I think there's a habit we've all, well, a lot of us, and a lot of players even, and even the coaches, everything sounds like it's a drive-by on Joe Schmidt when you're talking about how great Andy Farrell is. And the team wouldn't be able to do what they're doing today without Joe Schmidt and the year that he had in charge. But it went stale, and a lot of the compression, the pressure that was on the players didn't allow them to perform in 2019. And why I have less fear about them this time around is because Farrell is empowering them to perform. And what the way he's built this environment and learned from all the mistakes that he thought he saw along the way with Farrell, are setting this team up to succeed and to be relaxed. And he's relaxed and they feed off that energy. And he wants adversity. He wants them to show their character. He wants them to show who they are. I'm sure he was worried today, but they problem solved their way out of it. And there was times in that game where it looked like it was getting away from
him. Yeah, how worried were you? Keane mentioned it there.
He's worried at Murrayfield last week as well, I think.
I'm not sure. Maybe I'm a little bit of a natural worrier. Maybe because Keane was in New Zealand, he saw it firsthand, and they go, "I wasn't there." I still have this probably legacy of being, you know, being Irish, that you just have this fear.
A bit of this, like, so.
Probably a little bit. Now, I thought when in the first 10 minutes of the second half, first 20 minutes of the second half, when England went to the air, when they were slowing the game down, and Ireland couldn't, they started playing the way England wanted them to play, they were kicking the ball away. I could see Ellis Gendry was walking, but Ireland didn't seem to be able to identify them. The English players were really struggling with the pace of the game when they upped it, but they couldn't up it themselves. But when, I think Conlon coming on was a big catalyst for this, like Ryan Baird, unbelievable. Players like Ryan Baird, Dan Sheehan, relatively new to the international scene, dominating and wrestling control of the game back to their team, and they found a way. And look, I was concerned. I don't think I always thought they could find a way, but they have to find it. It wasn't going to happen for them today. England brought an awful lot to the party, asked them huge questions. Manu Tuilagi winning collisions early on. They defended their way through that, but they went 6-0 down. They're usually front runners. They don't usually have to come from behind. They were asked questions today by an English team who are full of good players, but haven't been playing well. But England performed today and forced Ireland to find a way through it. And it's all credit to them. It's so much better that they had to figure this out than to just have a procession. A procession would have been boring.
It's made it sweeter almost, hasn't
absolutely,
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to make that point. It makes it sweeter, but again, if you're looking forward, it's more valuable that they came through these last 2 weeks. You know, if they'd gone over to Murrayfield and, you know, Scotland had rolled over, then that wasn't going to be much use to come through a game like this. And England were far, far better today than they were against France last week. So again, if you think a bigger picture, it's so valuable. And Rod, you were mentioning a couple of players. I thought Bundyaki was you know, he's had some brilliant, brilliant days in an Ireland jersey, so I'm kind of slow to just say that it was his best game for Ireland, but I thought he was exceptional. Like a proper, proper big game performance. I thought Peter O'Mahony emptied himself again, who, by the way, has had an outstanding Six Nations. I think James Ryan again, like all these guys, like Johnny Sexton, you know, these kind of guys get the headlines, but I think there's guys in the pack there who really, really set the platform. It's just been incredible. Like I got to go down onto the pitch at the end, and we never get to run the pitch, obviously, and it was incredible to be down there. So, Shane, you know from a previous life and being down there doing interviews and stuff, so you have a way better sense of that. But being down there in the pitch and watching the players do their lap of honour was just remarkable. I think you get a sense of more of the occasion when you're down on the pitch, because obviously we're high up in a stand and you don't really get a true sense of the vastness of the stadium and things like that. And as the players were walking around, you could just see the glisten of the gold medals were on their neck. The emotion was incredible. I know we're going to hear from a couple of the guys who I got to catch up with, but the emotion on their faces, it was in the immediate aftermath, like 10, 15 minutes. They were really struggling to put into words what it meant. Like, I mean, you know, it goes back to the point that these are really special times that, like, supporters as well as the players should cherish.
Yeah, and one of the guys you mentioned, Rory, was Ryan Baird, and he's one of the guys you spoke to. And you remember the time he got that turnover? Sexton kicked in, it led to the 5 metre scrum, and then Robbie Henshaw went over the try. I just thought that was a pivotal moment. So tell us the guys we're going to hear from now, Keane.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Ryan Baird. I actually asked him about that moment. I won't spoil it. We can talk about it after the listeners hear it, but he came out with a cracking line, so listen out for that. I spoke to Ryan Baird, who's just a fascinating character. I thought tonight was a real coming-of-age performance for Ryan Baird. I thought he was outstanding. A couple of little errors, but that's to be expected. But he was very good. I also got a chance to speak to Ross Byrne, who I'm sure listeners will hear in his voice how emotional he was. You know, the journey that he's had from a personal point of view, you'll hear how much it meant to him. And I also spoke to Josh van der Vlier. What a few months it's been for the World Player of the Year. He made his 50th cap, won his 50th cap tonight in front of his family. And family is hugely important as well, as you'll hear him talking about now.
He hasn't been to a few games the last couple of years, so I weren't sure how many, if he gets any more games, but incredibly special to have him here. It means a huge amount. It's quite emotional. Running out at the start, knowing that he was there and all my family were watching, it was very special. I remember watching the Triple Crown when I was younger, and that was just the biggest deal ever. I remember going to Lansdowne Road with my dad and my brother, and so this is a bit of a bigger deal than that, but it's incredible special to be on the field here and be a part of it. I'm very grateful.
I suppose there was times where I thought I'd never be here again, you know what I mean? I'm glad to be here today, and it's really, really special.
Trying to sink it in at the moment, it's a bit surreal, you know. You come off the pitch and you just think about all the work you've done over the last, I don't know, 2-3 years and how it accumulates to a performance like this. Our first half was, we weren't happy when we came in, but second half we put our foot down and we executed on a couple of plays. And
your turnover in the middle of the try felt like a big, big moment. The lads kicked on from there.
Do you know what? I saw it and I thought, like, oh, this is what Tadhg Byrne would do. So I just did what he would do. So I'm taking no credit there.
I just copy him.
Yeah, so Ryan Baird there saying that he thought of Tadhg Byrne when he went for that poach. He said, well, I'm playing instead of Tadhg Byrne, so I need to go and, you know, be Tadhg Byrne here. I thought that was a really nice moment. I mean, guys like Tadhg Byrne and Gary Ringrose aren't, you know, able to finish off the job tonight, but what a job they did in terms of getting to Ireland here in the first place. And it was fitting that the whole squad was here. I mean, you saw Ian Henderson was in a sling, Finlay Beelam, and even a guy like Jamie Osborne were in knee braces out on the pitch. But it was so important, I think, to for the wider group to feel part of this. I think that goes back to the point that Rudd made earlier in terms of inviting the families in, but also having the wider squad, because even guys like Jamie Osborne, Kieran Frawley, Gavin Coombs, like, they didn't get to play, but they're the ones running in training, you know, against these guys as your Englands, as your Scotlands. That's a huge, huge job. It's not glamorous, but someone has to do it. And like Rudd says, everyone is buying into it. The collective of this group, I think, is the most impressive. There's outstanding individuals, but their collective power, and that just has shown, hasn't it, over the last couple of weeks in terms of guys dropping out, guys dropping in, and it hasn't made a difference to the overall performance.
One of the big talking points of worry was obviously the red card to Freddie Stewart. Was it the right call?
I thought it was, and I've seen an awful lot of people say it wasn't, and that led me to kind of question it. I thought Andy Farrell was interesting. He said, what did he say? It was the... He did say he felt sorry for Freddie Stewart, but he kind of said it was the right call, but he was almost...
Was it like, there's the rules type thing?
There's the rules, and I think it was more that, yeah, he didn't want to be seen to be critical. And like, Steve Borman completely avoided the question, as he always does.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, he was brutal. He's so uninspiring, Steve Borman. Like, I find it was press conference, very uncomfortable, really. I thought it was. I think as soon as you make forceful contact to the head in the way that Stewart did to Keenan, you are in trouble. People will say, what's he supposed to do? How's he supposed to get out of the way? Like, he does turn his body into Keenan. I mean, I thought it was his elbow connected with Keenan's head. It forced Keenan off for a failed HII, I presume. We don't know for sure, but he didn't come back on. To me, it was a red. England's discipline was poor all day. He's a little bit unlucky. Look, there's a lot of moving parts. Maybe a yellow would have sufficed, but my instinct was red. And then for Willis to do what he did when the game was still there to be won,
Their
discipline was terrible today. And that's what let them down, because they were really good in every other facet of the game. But Atoje giving away a penalty on Ireland's 5-metre line early on. They had Ireland in places they didn't want to be, but they let them out with their own discipline. That just shows maybe where they are in their own cycle of development. And they can't really see this as a false dawn, because they still have an awful way to go. They still lost 4-1 despite, performing today.
Yeah.
They only won two games out of five for the third year in a row. So that is for English rugby to be like that. And it's interesting, Rudy, you touch on Steve Borthwick. I agree, I find him strange enough kind of stuff that he comes out with. And he interrupted Owen Farrell a couple of times tonight, and I was out at the press conference on Thursday and just trying to ask him a simple question about Andy Farrell, and I don't know, I'm not saying he read the piece, but I noticed tonight he was very quick to jump in and praise Andy Farrell, because I just thought it was bizarre, really. But
because you said in that piece that he didn't praise, it was given to him on a plate.
Three different times, and I mean, you're not looking for anyone to go over the top, but the guys played together, they coached together, with the Lions. But I think it just sums up maybe the different type of characters that they are. Irish rugby is blessed to have Andy Farrell, the job that he's done and the players that he's brought in. But Owen Farrell was a bit more blunt, you'd have to say, in his assessment of the Freddie Stewart decision. It was tough, but I kind of agree with Andy Farrell. That's the letter of the law. I was in the pitch at the end, like I said, and I saw Hugo Keenan. Thankfully, he was walking around, so he seemed okay, but he suffered a head injury that didn't come back. And this is what World Rugby are trying to stamp out. So I know lots of people will say the game has gone soft and it's a rugby incident, and while lots of times I hate that term, perhaps that was a little bit more of a rugby incident, and it did look worse when it slowed down. But if you want to stamp it out, you've got to change players' behaviour, and I know it was a split second thing, but I just thought it was the elbow and that movement as well which was really dangerous.
I just can't imagine Andy Farrell talking over Johnny Sexton in the way that Steve Borthwick talked over Owen Farrell.
Give us an example.
So during the press conference, Owen Farrell was asked two questions, one about his dad and one about the referee. And Owen Farrell's an experienced test centurion who's captain his country long before Steve Borthwick became his coach. And is well able to handle big issues.
He's been in enough hot water himself.
Do you think he was trying to save Owen or something?
I think so.
Owen Farrell doesn't need a saving. Sexton actually touched on the fact that his dynamic with Farrell over the years has at times been difficult. The time he threw the toys out of the pram in Paris, and he admitted that, he said it was the low point of his captaincy, but Farrell stood by him, and I think they're really, really tight. But there's a trust there. Farrell listens to Sexton. He respects him. He empowers him. Borthwick is a bit... reminds me a little bit of Schmidt in that way, in that I think he wants to control everything. He didn't want Farrell to say something that might get him in hot water down the line. He's a big boy. You better let him talk. He's well able for it. He's the captain of England. He just dropped him a week ago as well. So maybe don't try and diminish him in front of the world's media. It's a small thing, but it's an example again. And it's his first couple of months as an international coach. Andy Farrell's had 2 years of difficulty before he became this old conquering hero that we're all talking about, and Max and Eric about. It does take time, but there's just bits about Borthwick that I just leave me wanting more. I don't see it necessarily, but then maybe I didn't see it with Farrell at the start either.
But it was also that time after their defeat to Scotland where he said there was nothing right with, or everything was wrong with this England team. What a thing to come out with.
Yeah, that's definitely a sense that I'm getting. There's a bit of I just think it's bizarre. There's a bit of poor us, poor England. I got that sense on Thursday as well, because he brought up Leinster off his own bat, and he didn't say it obviously explicitly, but the kind of the underlying tone was, there's 12 Leinster players in the starting Ireland team today. And others how are we supposed to compete with that? Whereas for years, England's success was based on Saracens. And just because the Premiership is overhyped and in dire straits at the moment, on and off the pitch, I would say, in terms of finances and in terms of because there's no relegation in the Premiership, we're seeing these massive high-scoring games. But that doesn't translate to test level, especially only if you consider France hockey and England at home. But in terms of these massive seesaw games, I don't think that's good preparation for test rugby. I think guys like Alex Donbrandt in particular, I just think they're overhyped, and I think that's a product of the Premiership being overhyped. But I did get that sense off Borthwick again in the post-match press conference that, you know, he doesn't want to look to the past in terms of what was done, but there was definitely kind of a sense that, you know, well, the damage has already been there and I'm the one trying to repair it. So they've got a massive job in their hands. Now, what I would say is they're on the good side of the World Cup draw. Now, they did a couple of tricky games, but compared to what Ireland are going to have to come through. So by the time they get to the knockout stages, they could have their house in order. That's one thing I would say in their favour, the draw.
Okay, let's bring it back to Ireland before we go. Dan Sheehan, he's just not a bad player, is he, really?
Decent, isn't he? Like, I mean, there's a couple of incredible athletic specimens in the Ireland team, the Ireland pack, and Baird and Sheehan are probably the two greatest examples. I mean, I don't think Manny Hooker's... It was a very cleverly worked move, you know, that Josh Van der Flier plays off the back of the ball. He brings Don Brandt, who I agree is a bit of a show pony with him, and he throws the pass in behind into the space, and Sheehan goes through the space that Don Brandt left behind. But he had the pace to finish it. And that's, like, not many hookers in the world can do that. And anything like Ronan Keller, who doesn't have the same pace but has not unbelievable physical attributes himself, is injured. And Rob Herring comes on and scores a very different try, but a very, you know, he's a habit of scoring very important tries.
Shades of the third test in New Zealand, wasn't it? The way he kind of peeled off them all. Some people might say slightly too early, but at both occasions he got over the line.
But, like, it's he's a big contributor to this as well. And he doesn't have the smarts or the speed and the athletic prowess, but he's a very important player. So you have a real array of talent, but they're deep. Like, they use three hookers through the tournament, three tight heads, I think three loose heads, three of almost everywhere. I think even out half and scrum half, three of everywhere. Mm. They've got depth, and that's when we start thinking about the World Cup. But I know people might get annoyed with us for looking forward, but it's hard not to get excited.
It is.
But Andy Farrell and Johnny Sexton are...
They mentioned it
like off their own bat, like that there's bigger fish to fry. Johnny Sexton finished his press conference saying, roll on the World Cup. So it's not like the media are driving this World Cup.
And I think today is a really good dry run for a quarter final, because that's about as much pressure as there ever going to be under. Waking up in the Shelbourne this morning, you know, day after St. Patrick's Day, knowing that there's 52,000 people, not, like, there wasn't many English crowd in the crowd for a lot less than normal, probably because of last week and the fact that hotel prices are off the charts.
I wondered if Matt Hansen see fight outside his hotel room.
Matt Hansen, I'd say, won't be talking. Well, he did talk to us today. I'm surprised they let him loose again.
Yeah, but geez, and for anyone, look out independent.ie for his latest quotes. They're pretty spicy.
The pressure today, and it got to them, it definitely got to them. They weren't as fluid, they were jittery in the first half, they made a lot of mistakes, the wingers, you know, James Law was forcing things, like, loads went wrong today, and they still found their way through. But the quarterfinal against France or New Zealand, if they get there, as long as, presuming they get over that Scotland game and South Africa and all those things that were speed bumps along the way, it's going to be exactly the same thing. You're going to wake up that morning knowing that no Irish team has ever done this before. The hopes of an entire nation are going to be raised by what's happened in the Six Nations, but also will be on their shoulders. But they've been through that now. They've been through it in New Zealand. They've ticked off so many boxes.
Is it the best Irish team ever?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Keane, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And I also think winning in Dublin, I totally agree with Rod, like, that brings a way different pressure than winning a third test in New Zealand, for all different reasons, because they were at the other side of the world. There was only a couple of thousand Irish people over there, lots of them expats. But doing it in the week that it was, with all the hype, like, we spoke about it during the week in terms of, like, the ticket requests and all that. So that brings a different kind of pressure. And they didn't play well, and they still came through it. So it can only go well for the future.
Okay, well, Keane and Rory, thanks a million for joining me tonight. We are off to enjoy the celebrations with the rest of Dublin City. Will and Luke will be back next week to review the game again. Thanks for listening.
All the work you put in and then come and actually do it. I think it'll take a while to sink in. I'm sort of soaking the atmosphere in now. I'm going to go see my family, my friends. I'm going to have a good night.
The Six Nations on the Left Wing Podcast. Rate, review and follow the show on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent Podcast.